This is the Skies Blue podcast.
Skies Blue podcast time again. Chesterfield 16 points clear at the top, two games in hand for them next Tuesday against Dagenham and Redbridge. So we're back, Phil Tooley, Paul Fisher, Daryl Carpenter, Stuart Basson to talk all things Spireites. We'll be looking back to the Watford game, looking forward to another busy month of February. It was a busy month in January when we lost games to the weather, but short month, well, there's 29 days in it this year, isn't there? Still half a dozen games to go in February, and Stuart, six games in February that could really make even the most pessimistic Spireite supporter think, do you know what, we might just make the playoffs.
Yes, there are, aren't there? They still come thick and fast for us, don't they? Quite a few away ones coming up now. I don't remember what our away record's like because it's so long since I looked at
nine
it.
Wins.
Yeah, we've got nine wins, so a 10th win will only be the 7th time in history we've got that far.
We had a really good January, obviously. We were all looking at January previous to that and thinking, well, that'll be a bit of a sticky month, won't it? All those teams that, you know, you'd expect to be among the chasing pack coming up. Well, we've seen all those off. And February, we've got games against some of the teams who, shall we say, aren't necessarily in the chasing pack. Well, people are saying, oh, well, we always play badly against poor teams now. You know? So there's plenty of material in there still for the natural pessimists among us. February has generally been an indifferent month for us on the playing side. We've got kind of a sort of a won as many as we've lost, got as many points as we've lost kind of record over our history in Feb, whereas January has always usually been quite a good month. But Bromley away coming up stands out, doesn't it, on the 17th. Have we arranged the Barnet game yet?
Not yet.
No.
Talking of that, Daz, did that postponement of the Barnet game actually do us a real favour? Because they'll have been thinking, oh, we can nick something back from Chesterfield. But the fact that they've not been winning and we have been winning means now, surely, Barnet and Bromley are just thinking about, we want points to get to second and third place. And whilst, of course, they'll never admit they're giving up the chase. I think had it happened on that, whatever January date it was meant to be, the 20th, I think it was, they had a chance just to narrow that gap a little bit.
They did. I suspect that Andy Woodman's mind games attempt has actually backfired on both Bromley and Barnet a little bit. We felt this last year as a chaser. It's the relentless pressure of every time you go back in the dressing room. Oh God, they've won again. And we've just never taken the foot off the gas, have we? You know, and I don't think it would have mattered whether we'd played them or not, Phil, in all honesty. I think it helped us from a point of view of rest. And we were getting 7 days between games instead of, you know, having to play Saturday, Tuesday. But other than that, I don't think it's benefited us or them either way, other than the fact that we keep winning and we keep the pressure on everybody.
Mm. And, of course, when Chesterfield went out of the trophy, and I know they played a young side against Welling, the same day Barnet and Bromley both went through, and I punched the air on that.
Yeah. Well, let's be realistic. To Barnet and Bromley, and Bromley only won the thing 2 years ago, didn't they? Mm-hmm. When they beat Wrexham in the final. It's a great opportunity for them to get to Wembley, have a good day out, and have a great chance of winning the thing. Whereas to us, we all knew, and I think the rest of the league all knew, they're really not taking this terribly seriously. I felt a bit sorry, really, for Southport that we managed to cobble together a side of reserves and kids who gave them a right battering on the day. But now it's anything like that where they're having to postpone again and rearrange fixtures and all that. And one eye will inevitably turn to Wembley at some point if they get close enough. I don't know how many more rounds there are. Three. The two-legged semi if they get there as well, I think.
Yeah.
So all these things, you know, added in the mix, are all in our favour, thankfully, which is rather nice.
Well, let's look back a little bit. Paul Fisher did a little interim Sky is Blue podcast, a behind the scenes look at the press area before the game last week against Southend United. And talking about behind the scenes press, hey, we got looked after well at Watford, didn't we, Paul?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, really, really nice, nice people down there. And it just the great facilities, and you saw all the sort of national press there as well, didn't you? National Radio were there, Five Live were sat next to me, John Bennett, just along the corridor, along the row from me at Watford was Adrian Durham of Talk Sport. So, you know, they classed it as a big game, you know, for the National League leaders to take on. And they saw an upset, didn't they? That's why they were there, to be brutally honest, didn't they? So, and they very nearly got one, to be frank about it. But it was such a great eye-opener as well at what level they are. I mean, their press conference section had 50 seats, Phil, was it? Oh, what about
at least
50 seats for a press conference post game, which I've got an amusing story as well with Kurt. After we'd done all the interviews with Danny Webb and everything, Kurt had to take him into the visiting press. So we went around this little bit, wasn't allowed in a certain area, had to go up this other bit, went through the stairs up to the area, took him into the area, sat him down, and there was three journalists there in the seat with 50, and none of them asked a question immediately. And Danny Webb saying, Kurt, if you brought me up here for nobody to ask a question, eventually like the local journalist of the ask him a question, and Danny, you know, padded it out a little bit, so he was there for a little while and everything. So I'll get Kurt to tell the story next time, but that was quite amusing. So but it fantastic facilities, and you know, I keep badgering on that the press at Chesterfield need a press room. You know, it's cold up there in the press box. You know, should give us a free drink as well, possibly. You know, but the facilities were great. They were
free
well
drink. They cost £3 each. Can't give them away.
Well, no wonder they're making record profits on the on the concourse. We were well looked after. It was brilliant. It was a great day, and you know, obviously spoiled by the last minute goal. But at the end, actually, I didn't really mind. Do you know what I mean? It was one of those where actually I didn't really, really care too much. You know, so but I loved it. Loved it.
Yeah, and you know, when Quigley scored that goal, the biggest disappointment with Dola was it wasn't in front of the 4,000 supporters.
Yeah,
at the
that's,
other end,
yeah, that's the only negative. Yeah, yeah, but still, it was great, great stuff.
And you know, Daz, you were sitting in amongst that. You did go, didn't you? I think you were sitting.
Oh yes.
What did it feel like in amongst it? Because it looked, from Paul and I's viewpoint, to be fantastic,
amazing. Yeah,
yeah. Never stopped singing from before kickoff till way beyond the final whistle. There's a belief in there, you know. I think that the vast majority thought we could get a result and at worst bring them back. And the way we played that first 30 minutes, it wasn't false hope, was it? You know, crowned off by a fantastic goal. I mean, the cross from Shackleford was tremendous.
What a cross, but, yeah. Cross does. Mm.
But the football that led up to it, in the build-up. But that had not been the only incident, had it? I mean, Dobre was playing out of his skin. Oldacre and Naylor were running, absolutely running the middle of the park. Whatever plan that Ishmael had put together was clearly not working for them.
No.
And while he made one or two changes, they were still a really, really strong 11 that he started with.
For very much so, yeah.
Yeah,
I suspect we made more changes than them on the day.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So, It was terrific. Atmosphere was awesome. I just wish we could have nicked the second one early in the second half and we had the chances to do it. Because I think if we go 2-0 up, it's game over.
Banks's effort, weren't it, in the first sort of 2 minutes of the second half, wasn't
it? Terrific football again in the build-up as well to it. And, after that, you just felt they kept bringing on more and more legs, didn't they? We did, but it was more of a struggle as the second half went on.
Yeah.
And a pal I was sat next to had just said, you know, the longer this goes on, the more likely they are to get the winner after they'd equalised. And so it proved right at the death. We were just half a yard off in that last move. And where we got to things earlier in the game, we didn't quite get to. And there was a little nick on it, wasn't there, that you know, took it away from Boot. So, but a great showing. Support was fantastic. I think the good folk of Watford will not forget Chesterfield in a hurry, both for the way they behaved on the day and the noise. And I know the club got a super email, didn't they, from Watford saying what a credit we'd been.
Yeah.
And how much they'd enjoyed the day and the fact that we paid respect to Graham Taylor and their supporter who'd been killed over in Afghanistan at halftime. The family were very touched by that. So, yeah, it was a great day out. Sad, I think we deserved a draw, really, in all honesty, over the piece. But as you said, Paul, bigger fish to fry.
Yeah. I absolutely agree with that sentiment. I was just really pleased at the end with the performance, and the result was, you're not going to say perfect, are you? Because you don't want your team to lose.
No.
But in that bigger fish to fry, as you say, that there is definitely an agenda this season that is win the league.
Yeah.
And we don't want to be distracted. But another little bit of history in there, Stuart, as well, reaching the third round for three seasons on the trot. Non-league teams don't do that very often because they start a little bit earlier, and Chesterfield never used to do it really as a league team. only when they started in the third round in the late 30s and early and late 40s, really. But yeah, what an achievement, really, in the last few seasons in FA Cup games. And they've all ended with great ties: Chelsea, West Brom, Watford. This year, we've had the blues after those defeats in the last couple of years, but this year, well, win, 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 win.
He's on mute. Hang on, I'll take him off.
Oh.
Randy, you put yourself on mute, Stuart.
Yep, you have, yeah. And,
oh, there you are.
I'm just trying to get it off.
Yeah, you've done it. Yeah.
You're off, mate.
No wonder our ratings went up briefly. yes, it was, wasn't it? And as you say, there was a bit of a sort of agenda with that, in that you wanted your team to go down and, you know, acquit themselves well, do themselves justice, and you didn't want them to come back having lost as heavily as we did at Chelsea or something like that. And we did all that, you know. We went down and we showed the wider footballing public that we are a good football playing side, you know. And there'll be people from League Two watching who will be thinking, fancy those coming up next season, you know. But yeah, three successive years in which we've won four ties, is it?
Yeah.
You know, and there's only five other non-league teams who have got to the third round in three successive seasons by winning that many games. Well, not even by winning that many games, because one of them, Corinthians, used to be given a bye to the to that stage of the competition every year. Oddly, they, a lot of them have happened quite recently with Altrincham and Boreham Wood. And you wonder, I suppose that's a factor of both the fifth division becoming more competitive and other clubs fielding weaker sides because their priority might be the European mega league or whatever, you know. So perhaps clubs in our position are being assisted a little bit in that.
Well, that really only makes a big effect when you get to the third round. You know, your lower clubs that they're playing to achieve the third round want to get to the third round.
But then, as you said, we went there and made four or five changes, didn't we? So, you know, people could look at it and say, well, we're saving ourselves for the league, you know.
And, well, Stan, let's get rid of the other cup competition, the FA Trophy. 2-0 defeat at Welling with a team of academy players, with the exception of Luke Chadwick. That said, Luke Chadwick is still the age of an academy player. Clearly, the club saw that as priority 75 when there's only three competitions that Chesterfield are entering, Stuart.
Absolutely. And you alluded to an unlucky manager earlier in the podcast, and I think the unluckiest manager of the year must be the Welling United manager, who guided his team to a record-equalling defeat of Chesterfield in this season, 2-0, and his reward for it was to get the bullet this week.
Oh, is it? Winning. Oh, right.
Yeah.
After beating Hemel Hempstead, he then got the sack.
Yeah.
After beating Hemel Hempstead.
They've been struggling, haven't they? But, you know, you go and you win a good run in the trophy, that can be a pivot on which your season swings, can't it? You know, so he's a bit unlucky in that respect. But yes, for us, the trophy, again, was about putting out a side that, you know, you hope will go and, you know, do justice to the club's name. And the result is perhaps a little bit secondary. And that was a case with us, you know, irrespective of the score against Southport, the boys did the club proud, I thought, you know, and then they happened to do that by going and scoring six, you know, against a team one league below us. And Welling was probably, they're probably a bit, as a squad, a bit older and a bit wiser than some of the Southport squad were. Although, yeah, they are the division below as well, aren't they, in the southern section?
Yeah.
And I don't think we disgraced ourselves there, really, you know.
And Paul, the academy as a whole, Neil Cluxton and his team must be delighted with how their some of their players, like Riley De Senna, Sam Hooper, plus the lads who were signed as a pro that have been out on loan this season, the likes of Wilkinson and co. You know, because there's no funding from the Football League anymore, it's going to be self-funding. And they've really taken hold of what's needed to do it and have brought a lot of players to a good level. They make the step up massive to the next level. But there's one or two players who look potentially as though they could make that step up.
Yeah, indeed. You look at players like Sam Hooper, the back end of last year, who's joined with... you know, your Archie Whites and Xander Duomo's, etc., and they got the contracts, and you can see them develop, especially in Sam Hooper's case. He looks like, in the EFA Trophy game last year, he came on as a sub and didn't look out of place or anything like that, but you could just see the development in a game against Southport, where he's had regular, you know, 5-day training or 4-day training, you know, with the first team squad, developing into a player, just sitting there and holding and looking really good. And I think that's pretty good for the development of them. Your next generation are your Liam Jessops, your Riley De Senna's, and those ones there who are looking the sort of standout players of that academy, of the feature of the group. So, you know, maybe there's something in it for them, but I've been to see the under 23s on a couple of occasions, and yeah, they look quite good. And I know they're not playing in the top echelons of a big league, but they're getting competitive football. Riley De Senna has also been at Stocksbridge Park Steels as a dual registration, hasn't he?
Yeah, they've got to play against men. That's the thing. It doesn't matter whether those men are reserves at Rochdale or first team players at Stocksbridge Park or similar, because they're wily men who've been around the block a few times and know how to stop a little fast winger or shove a centre half at a set play or anything along those lines. So they're learning that craft, aren't they? And having, although it is an under 23, they're generally 20 and younger, the players that are in the academy, but they are getting that playing against tougher opposition, physically tougher opposition, and it's bringing them on no end, Paul, isn't it?
Yeah, he certainly is, yeah. I think, yeah, you know, they're playing, the youth team are playing in the Central Midlands Alliance League, you know, and they're getting regular games. So they're getting, those that are sort of under 19, 20, they're getting regular games against, you know, established teams. You know, albeit some of them being reserve teams of a Northern Counties, but they're playing regular football games, you know, so it's great for their development. It's a bit like the Northern Intermediate League, isn't it, from many years ago. I would hasten, or the old Central League, isn't it, the reserves used to play. So so it's a good development, good grounding for them, and it's pleasing to see. You know, even the under-23s and Neil Cluxton in particular, him and his particular academy of coaches are doing wonders for the club. You know, they were rewarded with a cup victory last year, weren't they, in the under-23s cup. You know, they won last night against the same opposition to go through the next round of the cup. So, yeah, they're establishing a core base, you know, and if Chesterfield, when Chesterfield get into the Football League, you know, they'll be funded adequately, so they'll be able to take on some of these youngsters, you know, as a professional, a little bit more than what they have done now, you know. So I'm sure that the ones who got a contract to the back end of the season were stretching the budget somewhat, you know, so that they were helping, you know, the development, so that there has been interest. We don't want a situation where Lake and Torres is, you know, going to be, you know, nicked under his noses, and there's nothing we can do about that, you know. So. Although that might happen, you know, anyway, with a football league, but you want some comeback, don't you, on that situation? Yeah. So
absolutely. And the model for the academy, and we'll move on to the first team in a sec. The model for the academy is all of the players who are older than school age are being educated, and they get funding for their education. So I nipped into the club yesterday and couldn't get a seat in the cafe, because it was lunchtime for all of the academy players who are doing their education that they do. So it's a fantastic model, and there's no reason that can't carry on alongside the funding.
No, indeed. Yeah, indeed.
Anyway, Daz, January 1st team, National League, 4 games, 4 wins, all at home, 3 clean sheets, Altrincham and Southend serious teams, not blown away, but they're serious teams, and they were both beaten. It's been a good old month, hasn't it?
Yeah, terrific. Because it's January, we'd had the blip at Solihull, which had carried over a little bit hangover-wise into the first half at home against Solihull. I think we're just after half-time, we dropped 2 behind, but produced then, what was it, an 8 or 10 minute spell of incredible football to turn that one around. Pitch is suffering a bit, isn't it? As lots are across the country. I was listening to an interview on 5 Live with one of the Premier League groundsmen last week, and he said conditions haven't been as bad for years, and even with all their money.
Yeah, Derby's looks terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, they went back to the baseball ground.
Well, it's
not quite.
Well, I think they're trying to reminisce, I think, Phil.
So the pitch is a bit tired. Obviously, as the next few months warm up, they get some growth back in the grass, it'll recover nicely for the end of the season. But things are against you. We keep making loads of changes, don't we? We've had the odd injury and mishap. Colclough out and Palmer out and whatever, and people just step in, and you know, it's almost seamless. We dug out a result, didn't we, against Alti, who I think universally accepted as being probably the best team we've played all season, home and away. And then to the Woking game was a funny game, wasn't it? Because we never really got in top gear. Got ahead, and apart from a very late flurry, they didn't, in all honesty, look like equalising. We looked in control of the game. And then Saturday, I thought from minute one, we were at it. Although there were a few more 6 out of 10s than 8 out of 10s in one or two places. You say Mandeville's not quite been on it since he was off with his illness, has he? Doesn't look quite as sharp as he has been. But it was terrific performance. Again, use of the bench, even with one or two bodies missing. And the timing and the tactics associated with the changes Cookie seems to be getting virtually every decision right this season, and it's great to watch, because some of the quality of the goals, I mean, again, that the Berry goal against Altrincham was, you know, top draw. The one on Saturday, actually the one in, not long after the first goal on Saturday, was even better move when it got blocked.
Yeah.
Where there was about 7 or 8 one-touch passes and third man running, and they were chasing shadows. And then, of course, we bring on Armando, who suddenly decides he's going to have a 20-minute cameo of unplayability. Quigley's on 20-odd seconds and scores with his first three. It doesn't matter what Cookie does at the minute. It's just working out for him. So long may continue. Eh?
And with that, you're talking about that Dobra coming on, and he was absolutely unplayable. They've been run ragged. And bearing in mind Southend, in my opinion, in the two fullbacks, Rolf at left back and Scott Morris at right back, I think that's the best fullback combination outside Chesterfield in the league. They're both attacking, and they hardly ever got forward. But I didn't appreciate live at the time Mandeville's dummy on that goal, that Dobra did. You look at the wonderful ball, the wonderful run from Dobra, but the quality of the ball from Jacobs. But clearly there must have been some communication between Jacobs and Mandeville.
The
dummy just came through. And say, you didn't spot that at the time. Well, I didn't spot that at the time. But when you see it back, you think, flipping heck, that was even better than I thought it was. And the dummy just added to it, didn't it, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, Jacobs is to me the best brain at number 10 that we've got by some margin. I mean, his sense of awareness, how to stand still to create space. He's always got his head up, looking for a forward pass. Greg loves playing off him. You can see. Yeah. You know, they played together a long time before. They're making runs into certain areas. His awareness of one-touch layoffs and people moving around him. And, yeah, you can imagine him shouting to Mandeville, over, and he just lets it go so he can, you know, Dobra can continue the run round, the circular run round, and he can just find him and open up half the penalty box by doing it as well. I mean, it was terrific, and
it was his 9th assist of the season. 3 of them have been in cup competitions, but 6 in the National League. 9 assists, so only Mandeville in front.
I mean, I know Cookie waited patiently to get him in the summer and thought he hadn't got him. And there was that story I think we mentioned earlier in the season where they got a call within half an hour to say that Berry, who they weren't going to get, was coming, and within half an hour they were also getting Jacobs. So I think a call had to go into Phil Kirk to see if we could stretch the budget. But wow, you know, they were worth waiting for, the pair of them, weren't they?
Well, let's just, Paul, just think about that. Jacobs as a player. I mean, we know his pedigree. We know what he's done. We know his history. In the league this season, he started 17 games and come on 10 times as a sub, scored 4 goals. That's just in National League matches. Last season, when we had a pretty good side and we were all purring about Tim Akinola, he started 10 games as well last season and he came on 16 times. So that's almost identical to Michael Jacobs. He didn't score and I hardly got any assists.
Yeah.
So there's output coming from this season's players.
Yeah, indeed. So they obviously...
Despite Akinola being loved, universally loved.
Yeah, he was. And, you know, you could see there's a sort of player with potential there for him. And so Cookie thought, right, well, let's upgrade a little bit here, didn't he? So Jacobs wanted to move further south. I think he was very nearly went to play... He was back at Northampton, wasn't he? Because he lives in Northampton. So they'd moved to League One. And there was another team that were really interested in him as well, coming up from Portsmouth. But he wanted to go back sort of north. So Chesterfield obviously stretched the budget again and probably gave him some travel expenses, you know, so to push the boat out there. But, you know, that Cookie wanted Cookie to work with him, hadn't he? So Michael Jacobs knew exactly what he was getting into. He knew that Will Grigg was already going, so there's a little carrot, isn't there, for you? So So yeah, it's
and they're proper mates off the pitch as well.
They are, yeah, yeah, by all accounts. So so yeah, and they played a lot of football together, haven't they? So so yeah, a real upgrade on Akinola, really. So you know, that all bodes well, doesn't it? And so and he can come into the side. He doesn't mind just dropping out, you know, and somebody else taking that berth, you know. So the flexibility, the fluidity of the squad itself, that various amount of players can play in certain different positions. Ollie Banks, for example, can play as a holder, which he likes. He prefers that more because he gets more time on the ball rather than being up front, where he's more natural, you know, assisting and getting goals. So, you know, it's such a, they've got such a good squad at the minute. So at the minute,
well talking about upgrades, Paul,
yeah,
we just mentioned Akinola to Jacobs, and you can never compare two different players and say that. But Ukeg Boolam, Jez, last season, four starts, 29 sub appearances, two goals, assist or two. James Berry, five starts, 17 on the bench, and three goals. He's also got five assists in the National League and obviously scored against Southport. Again, that's another off the bench uplift, isn't it?
It is, and you can see the hunger and desire that was with Jez at times. But what was letting him down was at times, and I'm fairly certain this is probably open knowledge, was the fact that he was a bit questionable around the clock, wasn't he? Let's say. that's probably what held him back a little bit in many respects. But he was, you know, he was a good player, you know, so he's something that Cook could work with. Now, what Chesterfield saw was an advantage there, that if they sign James Berry, then they, you know, Jez can go off to Pastures News and they'll get some money for him, you know. So that helped to pay towards James Berry. I can't remember the timeline or whatever happened with, because Jez got sold just after the start of the season, didn't he?
Yeah, he came on early doors, one sub appearance.
Yeah, so they'd obviously gone for an upgrade there. But two players of almost identical scenarios are hungry, almost gave the game up as well, and found a sort of new lease in life as well. And Jez is doing very well at Rochdale, I understand. So it's more closer to home. He's Manchester based, isn't he? So and James Berry seems to be absolutely loving his football here, judging by the interviews that we keep doing with him, Phil. So, you know, obviously Chester had to part with some money to get him. A bit like they did with Jez, in actual fact, so from Matlock. But
a bit more though, Paul, I understand.
A bit more, yeah. A lot more.
An extra bag of balls, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, that Chester have got development and potential for the future with James Berry. They see more than Jez who kicked them. So
and talking about upgrades, Stuart, one big upgrade this season has been Armando Dobra to Armando Dobra, because in the summer I was talking with Paul Cook and Gary Roberts, and they were sort of saying, well, last season we only managed to get 27 league appearances out of Armando Dobra. We need to get to 37 was the thing that they mentioned. Well, last season Dobbs was 23 plus 4, got 6 goals. This season he's on 20 plus 6 and 7 goals. And whilst he's had a few times where he wasn't at his brilliant best, A, is playing more often, and B, his output hasn't dropped.
Well, indeed, yes. And he is an upgrade on what he was last season, if only for his defensive work, you know, which has just come from nowhere, really, hasn't it, over the course of the close season. You know, he gets back and he tackles and he wins the ball back in advanced positions as well, which helps to keep pressure on when we're pressing forward. He'll have that sort of output that, you know, you look at a promotion team and you think their attacking midfielders all need to weigh in with 8, 9, 10 goals over a season, something like that. And Armando is doing that at the moment, and he's on for a really good season. And, you know, credit to the young man, he's signed another contract, and you know, if we haven't got him for very much longer, then at least we'll get quite a chunk for him if the time comes for him to move on, you know.
Yeah, and just of course last season he picked up a fair few cards, and everything along those lines. I've just been checking. He's on 7 yellow cards in the National League, and the 10 cutoff, the one for a suspension after 10, is 37 matches. So he's got to avoid getting 3 bookings in 8 games.
Which, so, you know, given his kind of disciplinary outlook in general this season, I'm sure he can do, you know, because he hasn't looked anything like as sort of tempestuous or hot-headed or something as he did on occasions last season. You know, he's in control of his own game much better, I think, and you know, that shows in the return that we're getting from him.
And Daz, it was just mentioned there about Dobbs signing an extended contract. One of the things Paul Cook said when he first came was the turnover of players has just been ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And it's taken a while to get the squad that he trusts. But all of a sudden, he started just putting out those deals. The squad's going to be pretty similar to this season, next year, one would assume. Takes me back to 79, 80, 80, 81, still, you know, the pinnacle of my Chesterfield watching time in terms of what division they were in, how good the team were. And of course, in the summer of 80, 81, Arthur Cox's team only added Danny Wilson. That was the only addition, because Cox had been spending time getting the right squad, and then you just want to keep it. Cook is doing exactly that, isn't he, now?
Yeah, yeah. Oddly enough, while Stu was talking, I've been writing down the squad, and if you look at Tyrone Boot, obviously Boots, I think, was given a 1-year deal. Tyra's on loan, so next season we'll need to do something on the goalkeeping front. Now, whether that's if we go up, Everton might say, well, have another year, Harry, because Harry's clearly loving life with us, isn't he? And he's developing.
Little goal celebration video showed that this weekend, didn't
it? Yeah. And I think he's a real favourite with the away contingent, our away contingent, because he always interacts with them post-match and stuff. So clearly enjoying life. Shackleford's got a new deal. I think we've still got an option on Jeff King.
Club option, yeah.
Yeah, whether we take up that option, I'm not entirely sure. Horton's obviously got a new deal. Clements, I think he's probably at a contract, but I've heard rumours on the grapevine he might be next one in line to get another deal.
Well, he showed how good he was on against Southampton.
Yeah. He was terrific, wasn't he? As though he'd never been away. Williams and Grimes have got new deals. I don't know what the Ash Palmer original deal was and whether he's got...
Finishes in the summer, is that a contract?
So that will be an interesting one. Particularly as Stockport offloaded him when they got back in the Football League.
I think one of the reasons for that
was they switched from 3 to the back to 2 to the back.
Yes.
They got an overload at the back.
Yeah. But whether Cookie feels he's what he wants as his third centre back, if you like. Freckleton's obviously on loan. I wouldn't mind seeing him back for a season. Or if Sheffield United want to let him go, then, you know, sign him on by all means. Jones, Oldacre, Naylor's obviously under contract. Jones and Oldacre, new contracts. Mandeville got a new deal, didn't he? Dobra.
Banksy is the standout one.
I don't know about Jacobs. Was he a 1-year deal, Jacobs, in the summer?
It was undisclosed.
Right.
I'm just going to assume that it's 1 year, but I don't know.
I'd love to keep Jake. I know he'll be 33 next season, but
I'm not saying it's not more, but just assume that it's 1 year.
No, my gut feeling was it was only 1 year, Paul. So I'm with you on that, but I'd love to give him another one because I think again at League Two level he'd still be far too good for most teams. And that little bit of guile you need, you know, when you're playing against teams that come with the low block and stuff, he's just got that X factor, hasn't he, for breaking teams open. So, yeah. He said he wanted continuity. There have been far too many players in and out the door, most of which you'll never remember. And he was quite right. And
I think Berry, Grigg and Quigley are all there next year as well, aren't they?
So there's not a lot to be done, is there? Maybe what would you do with a goalkeeping situation? Would you give Boot another year in the Football League?
I mean,
bringing a new number one, you know.
If Harry Tyrer signs a new loan deal, and if Everton allow us to do that, then Ryan Boot is surely going to want first team football somewhere else, isn't he? Mm. Because he's an age of 29, 30 now, where he should be starting every game. Or he might be happy with the status quo, and want to be fighting for that number one spot at Chesterfield. So
he's done nothing wrong. You didn't mention Horton, does he? He's got
Horton. He's another one. So
and what about Colclough? What's Colclough on?
He signed an extended contract, didn't he, till 2025? Yeah, I think. Okay.
So same team. It's the same team, isn't it?
You're filling in around the edges, aren't you?
Yeah, and you don't feel that top of Paul Cook's agenda right now, today, is to go and get somebody now, do you? Additional injury apart. You don't feel there's anything necessary, do you? Why would you do that and potentially upset the apple cart of what you've got, unless you have to?
The only position that I think we're thin on is up front. Because, you know, we've sent Harley out on loan, haven't we, to
he's not
Kingsley.
Didn't play the weekend. Didn't play in the 16 at all.
No. He didn't have much of a run with us except in the first round of the trophy, did he? So if something did happen to Gregor Quigley, we are thin up top. But other than that, I think we're okay to the end of the season, barring, you know, a tsunami of injuries, which God forbid. Yeah.
Well, put it this way, Daz, Chesterfield got till March, haven't they? To if there's an injury to a striker, they can bring somebody in March, can't they? On loan or whatever. So, you know, they're not you know, tied by the transfer window, which finishes on Thursday.
We could always go back and get Paul McCullum for the last 3 months of the season.
well, by the third Thursday in March or whenever it is, you know, the finishing line might well be in sight.
They've scored 50 goals in the National League easily, and he's got 23 of them.
He's
a good player.
Stop him. Now, Quigley didn't play. Scott Quigley didn't play last week for Eastleigh, so I don't know if he's injured. He wasn't on the bench at all either, so I'm not sure if he's injured. But he's got 9. Then Chris Maguire,
he's quite key, isn't he? He's a good player.
He's more of a one, but I think by all accounts he played up front alongside McCallum when they got Tonk 4-0 at Altrincham. And they've not won since Christmas, Eastleigh, in league or cup. They of course lost in a replay to Newport and avoided that Man United clash. We've not talked about crowds. We'll talk about crowds in a little bit, but they got their record crowd in the game against Newport, the replay, 5,075. Brilliant. It was 50 more than their previous record, which was also a cup game a few years ago against Bolton Wanderers. They broke it in their last home match. Well, plenty more to talk about here on the Sky is Blue podcast, and we'll be back in a sec. Well, when you're top of the league by 16 points with games in hand, you're the best team. Chesterfield have won the most games at home. They've won the most games away. They've scored the most goals. They've not conceded the least, but they're certainly not dreadful in that department. But one of the things, Daz, has been they've scored from set plays, they've scored from free kicks, they've scored from corners, they've scored from open play. And whilst we all love a rasping free kick, you can't knock that. Some of the style of some of the goals that we've seen this season from a football perspective has been out of this world. I keep when it comes up to the Player of the Year awards and you've got to have a shortlist for the goal of the season. A few years ago, we used to all be scratching our heads to think what was what and get a shortlist up there. So I write, if there's one, I write it down. I keep a shortlist. I've got 19 on my shortlist. And so, you know, in recent terms, in the time that we've been talking about, just January, Will Grigg, his second against Gateshead. It's not about the finish, it was about the build-up. Absolutely magnificent. Ollie Banks against Altrincham. Again, not about the finish. It was about the build-up. James Berry, Altrincham, about the build-up and the finish was pretty good as well. James Berry's shot was just a crackerjack, wasn't it, from against Southend. And then Dobra's moving. That's just four absolute brilliant goals just in January. It's been amazing, the quality of them, hasn't it?
All round, the football we're playing is nectar, isn't it? It's just wonderful stuff. I mean, we control for such long periods in games, you can almost get blasé. But we've also scored some crackers. I mean, the one you were talking about there, the build-up to the first goal against Altrincham, we'd actually been under the cosh for about 10 or 15 minutes. Mm. And then suddenly out of nowhere produce five or six passes and one-touch moves and running off the ball and just carve them wide open. So it's that mixture of the dominance and scoring and having purple patches and scoring. And then we can also just produce something out of absolutely nowhere of the highest quality, either to take a defence apart or, as in Berry's case, produce a finish into the top bin off the underside of the bar. We're almost undefendable, I would think, for managers when they sit down and think, well, you know, like we were saying with Paul McCullum, you stop McCullum playing and easily are done. Well, where the hell do you start with us?
Yeah. Just looking at the goals in the National League, well, my list has got Grigg on 15 because he didn't score that one that Grimes got. But I think goal bonuses might have come into play. Naylor, 8. Dobra, 8. Quigley, 8. Banks, 7. Colclough, 7. Mandeville, 5. You know, they're not big numbers, but there's a lot of
A lot of them,
isn't there? I've got Grigg on 18 because he's still not changed for that own goal that was clearly own goal against against Barnett. He's still credited with that.
So that's right. There's a Dobra one and the Grimes one. He's got one in the cup. That's why it adds up to 18
because he scored in the cup game, didn't he?
So it's 16 on Marley's, 15 plus one, and then the two dubious goals panel ones and. There's no question Grigg didn't get the Dobra one. Now, whether Dobra got it or it was OG or whatever, we can debate. But he definitely wasn't Grigg.
No.
It doesn't matter how many times you look at the one a match or two ago against Woking, you can see it either way you want to see it, can't you? But I'm convinced it was Grimes.
It's Grimes' goal, most definitely. The way that confused me as well, and I said this in commentary, was that it went Grimes, and then it went, but Grigg's claiming it because he was. He initially, like, he pointed to his chest.
But he was smiling.
So,
and I've told this story before. John Duncan once said when Phil Brown hadn't scored for ages in the league, and it was away at Newport County, and there was one, it looked like an own goal off John Radish, but Phil Brown was in the right vicinity, and we all agreed we'd credit it to Phil Brown because he hadn't scored for ages. And John Duncan told me the story when he was at Spurs, the London Standard or the Evening Telegraph or whatever it was called, used to offer a case of champagne to the first London player to score a hat trick in a season, and Dunks won it. He said, and then I was nowhere near two of them. But there were they weren't televised. The goals weren't shown then. So he claimed them. That went down in your morning paper, and he got a case of champagne. But there you go. And we mentioned Quigley as well in terms of improvement. His stats last season: 28 plus 15, 7 goals. He's on 5 plus 18 with 8 goals this season. That's another massive upgrade to you.
It is, isn't it? The way he's come on this season, it has been fantastic, because you buy a player when you bring him in at the sort of age that he was, and you think you've probably more or less got the finished product, you know, you're buying it straight out of the box. But to come in and improve himself like he has under Paul Cook is fantastic. And I think there's only Scott Bowden ever scored more goals coming off the bench than him now. Far behind that. He must have scored, how many of his goals this season have been off the bench? Probably three quarters of them, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't like to see a player labelled as a super sub. you know, because you want them to be able to play 90 minutes and be involved and contribute for 90 minutes, you know. But if we can start Joe when we need to and bring him off the bench as an automatic kind of thing in games like we've seen to round about 75, and it works, then why not keep doing it? And if Joe's happy with it, and I should imagine he is, then let's carry on doing it. It works.
Well, he's happy enough to sign another year, isn't he?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. And that's another great signing, you know, because he's a bit different to Will Grigg, isn't he? So we've got like plan A, plan B, because the plan A is just to go out and win the game, isn't it? But you know, you've got two different approaches slightly. And you looked at Southend's defenders who looked as though they could mix it up a bit, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, well, we brought Joe Quigley on. He's got a bit more height at set pieces when we're attacking and defending, which we perhaps lacked a little bit on Saturday compared to some of their players. And he can just bring something slightly different that seems to wear down the defenders even more when they see Grigg going off, you know.
I just want to touch on, the Southend defenders. And one impressed me in particular was Harry Taylor. Well, Harry Taylor, actually. He was the one who made that tremendous challenge that timed to perfection. And apparently he's been doing it all season. I think it was in the first half, but it looked like he was going to absolutely nail this guy. But he won the ball and just took it off him. And it was just a superb challenge. Well, number 16, Harry Taylor. Really, really good. Yep. And he was one who was motoring forward as a centre-half. So he was a bit more fluid and going into midfield.
So. And he has played in midfield for Barnet quite a lot. He's played a long time for Barnet, didn't he?
Yeah.
He was a regular midfielder.
Yeah, really good. Really good player.
But Kensdale as well, you know, you could see why Southend came into that match with the best defensive record in the division,
yeah,
because they've got two fantastic fullbacks and they've got two fantastic central and they've had to play this season because they've had no alternatives, and they've grown into a really, really good team. They've conceded three this season, but not since September. And Chesterfield really, really did well. I mean, yeah, two worldies in that, but you've got to do it. And looking about squad rotation, there's bound to be some Daz in February. Six more games, four of them away: Eastleigh, Dagenham, Bromley, and Halifax away. Ebbsfleet and Rochdale home. That's another manager gone as well. Dennis Katrivi's
Ebbsfleet,
hasn't he? So, so that squad rotation, which the players, when they talk to Paul and talk to myself at the end of the game, they all seem to get it, don't they? They realise, and you know, you particularly see Jeff King, who must be inside burning with disappointment of the amount of games he's played or not played this season. But he's the biggest celebrator of them all, even if he's unused sub, he seems to be, Daz.
Yeah, I think he's a team player, Jeff, and he must realise the way Shex is playing, he's going to play second fiddle, because Shackelford, apart from when he's been out injured, I thought he was a decent player when he was a Maidenhead. I was a bit disappointed in him last year, but God, he's made a hell of a comeback this time, hasn't he?
He has, and
very well deserved to get his new deal. But yeah, I think everybody, right from the outset, when you look at the depth of the squad and the quality of the squad, and these, all the players say, oh, you want to see, you know, we knew we were a decent side. We could tell when we were in pre-season and stuff. And it happens every day in training. You get this constant feedback from the players, don't you? They know what a good squad they're in. And the way the season pans out, you're going to have times where you sit out, and other times where you come on for 15 minutes, and other times where you might have two or three weeks off and then come in for a run of six games. But Cookie seems to have, I don't know, placated footballers' egos to the point where they all seem absolutely delighted, whether they're on the bench, it's sat in the stand, or in the first 11. It's an amazing three-card trick he's pulled off this season somehow.
And you think, Stu, that King might have a big part to play, because we've talked many a time, no point in carrying on talking about it, about defensive abilities. And the South End game, you got Chesterfield's two best defenders as fullback defenders.
Yeah.
And with King, when you look at Chesterfield's home games in particular, there's only Rochdale in the top half that Chesterfield have got to play at home. We've got the bottom four to play. You'd think that King had relished those sort of games, too?
Oh, I think so, yes. Yes. It has been unfortunate for him because, you know, this time last year, up until this time last year, we'd have thought he was first name on the team sheet, wouldn't we? You know, and he came back for that playoff final at Wembley and played pretty well, I thought, you know, up against County's kind of tricky wingers. So you'd have expected him to have kind of started well and hit the ground running, and it just hasn't worked for him, which is a shame, but obviously that's good news for the other players who are in there, and all round it's good news for the team because we're sat at the top of the league, points clear. But you would hope that, you know, we haven't kind of seen his career here sort of petering out. And as you say, with teams coming up, games coming up against teams that we can, you know, more easily play that kind of attacking fullback that King is against, then you would hope there is, you know, more to be seen from him still, certainly. And the way that, as you say, that he celebrates as much, you know, as the next man, indicates that he doesn't feel that there's kind of a disconnect between him and the football club, which is important, you know. It obviously must not to play on a regular basis, but as long as his own kind of morale can be kept up, then he'll be ready to come in and do well for us when he does, I'm sure.
Well, Eastleigh Paul, next up, of course, the epitome of inconsistent this season. They're 11th in the league as we talk. There may be some opportunity for that to change with Tuesday night's games. They've got a negative goal difference, which is always unusual when you're in the top half. I know they're only 11th, but they've got a negative goal difference of 8, which is, you know, the worst in the top 11, not surprisingly. Aldershot got a -2, who were in 7th place. But the best run of consecutive wins they've had this season, 2. The worst run of consecutive defeats they've had this season, 2. But they did draw the first 3 matches, so they had a string of draws. They are absolutely inconsistent. And with the squad they've got, they should be doing better.
No, most definitely should be better. Stuart Donald, in now as owner, back in at owner, as the club likes to throw cash at it, doesn't he, really? But it's whether it's spent wisely on what manager they pick. And Richard Hill's still there as the temporary boss, isn't he? From taking over from Lee Bradbury. But they are the masters, as you say, of inconsistency. It wouldn't surprise me if Saturday's game is 4-3 either way. You know, it's going to be one of those, isn't it?
So, well, we've had some daft ones with Eastleigh in the last year.
Yeah. Well, Chesterfield lost their last season 2-1, didn't they? They scored first in the first half. Chesterfield equalised with a random cross come shot from Liam Mandeville that went into the near post. Yeah, yeah. And then they scored in the last minute with the smallest man on the pitch coming in at fullback. Heading one in, didn't he?
And then the reverse fixture last season was that mad 8 minutes at the end. Yeah. That came back where Dallas is fine.
Andy Dallas, really. Yeah. So And this year, just were 3 cruising with 10 minutes to go, and they bagged 2, didn't they? It was all a bit, harem scarum at the end, wasn't it? A bit worrying, but they managed to push through. So they've had some cracking games. Eastleigh have won it. The SMH Group Stadium before, just as Chesterfield and a really good record. I think that was the last year's was the first loss. Is that about right? Off top of my head, I think.
We always used to nick them 1-0. We had lots of 1-0s.
Curtis Weston.
That crackerjack from Curtis Weston, which was a year ago or a year or two ago as of yesterday, wasn't it? I think that was a Danny Webb caretaker job, wasn't it?
I seem to remember the first time we went there, one of the random Martin Allen loanees that came in that played 3 games and left. You know, I'm not Alfie Beeston, but somebody of that ilk came in and scored his first ever goal.
The kid from Sheffield United, wasn't it, I think?
I think, anyway, he scored.
We've won 3, drawn 1 and lost 1 at their place.
Right. Jonathan Smith and Tom Denton scored the year after. Mandeville scored a winner in COVID.
Yeah.
Curtis Weston scored a last-minute winner on telly. And then we lost last year, didn't we? So, boom.
Yeah, and of course, they've helped to resurrect the career of Luke Kroll, former Spire, who's suffered badly with injury. But he's made 9 appearances, and they've conceded 25 goals in those 9 appearances.
Right.
So he was taken off at half-time against Altrincham. I don't know if that was an injury because it was 2-0 at half-time, so maybe they wanted to shake something up. Martin came on, who's a much bigger, taller, stronger defender, isn't he? Experienced Aaron Martin.
Aaron Martin, ex-Burton, is he?
I'm just having a quick look down.
Is that Aaron Martin?
Yeah, this is Exeter, which isn't in East Asia. And he joined Easter from Port Vale.
Right.
And he was a kid and played quite a few, 20-odd games for Southampton at the start of his career.
Oh, right.
So he's been about a bit. But Luke's not steadied the defence, put it that way. But when you've got players like Balderline, who was a great player in Notts County, then went and played a couple of years in the league. Was it for Sutton? Was it Sutton?
Sutton
United, I think. And Maguire, who we talked on about earlier on. McDonnelling in goal is the go-to when you've got an injured goalkeeper in the playoffs, isn't he?
Yeah.
Sort of goes and plays for everybody there. They've got the likes of Jake Taylor, who had a terrific career with Exeter, 200-odd games for Exeter City, who knows how to play a good driving midfielder. So, they've just not got going this year. They've not got a run going. And they're conceding a lot of goals. But as you said, Paul, they're always likely to score a few. And then the game in the first of our two games in hand, the rearranged game against Dagenham and Redbridge, they're another team with a lack of consistency. And Daz, their American owner, has sort of said, okay, I've not done what I managed to do. I painted the toilets, but I can't quite get everything else going right. And so they're in a time of flux as well. So it might be a decent time to play them.
Yeah, I think it was fairly obvious that this great revolution that they were planning was never really taken hold, has it? They've flirted with the playoffs a couple of times. They've had the odd decent run and a few notable wins. I think they stopped Wrexham finally challenging Stockport, didn't they, on the last day of the season a couple of years ago. And so they've had one or two notable results. I mean, they came up and gave us a bloody nose last year, didn't they?
3-0
up at half time and so on. But they're very, very inconsistent. I think this is the month where we shut the door on everybody. I really do, this month coming up. I cannot, for the life of me, even including Bromley, which will be difficult because it's Bromley and it's the pitch and all that goes with it, my gut tells me we've 6 wins coming up and that'll do the job.
Yeah, you might eventually get your 10 wins on the bounce.
Yeah.
23 times since Sky is Blue started.
I think once, and then I backed off.
Oh, right, okay. It just seems more like that.
More like that.
But again, that inconsistency of Dagenham, they lost their they lost 3 games on the trot in August. Then they won 3 games on the trot the end of August and beginning of September, and they've not done more than two on the bounce either way, won or lost, since. Their last match, just to put it into some sort of perspective, they lost at home to Kidderminster. And I know Phil Brown has got a little bit of new manageritis there. Looking forward to Kidderminster coming to our ground.
Ooh,
carry on the great relationship between
pop the camera on the dugout. That'll be good.
But I did learn an awful lot about Phil Brown the other day. I was just reading basic rubbish about Southend on Sea, and it's the hottest, sunniest place in the United Kingdom officially. So that's clearly why is that orange?
Oh, right. Spent
many years at Southend United. Yeah, I didn't realise that.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I only thought Phil Brown worked in the summer. So I didn't realise he came in. I didn't think he was alive in the winter. So it was quite amusing, wasn't it? As soon as Phil Brown gets appointed in Kidderminster, we recall Bailey Hobson.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is that a coincidence?
No.
Who knows the secrets of the Black Magic box? But again, you know, Dagenham, they've got decent players. It's not worked for them this season. They've got Hessenthaler in midfield. Eastman's a big, strong defender at the back, you know, and you have to go the long way around to get round him, don't you? And you know, they've got Effiong up front, Frankie Vincent in midfield as well. So yeah, they've got players who know how to play, but they've just not worked out as a team this season.
It sounds like a 50s crooner to me, Frankie Vincent. When he plays. That's so. Yeah.
I wonder how Phil Brown ended up at Barrow, bearing in mind he'd been at Southend enjoying the hottest, sunniest place in Britain, and ended up on the coast at Barrow.
It's got to be nuclear.
Yeah. It's not too far away from whatever wind scales call these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, you've got nuclear subs in the Barrow shipyard.
He upset Ollie Banks when he arrived there, didn't he? So
Well, he lit up Walney Island.
Yeah, absolutely. Ebbsfleet at home, they'll obviously have a different manager in for that, whether they're fully appointed after Cotrib's dismissal. And then it's Bromley. We'd all take a point at Bromley, wouldn't we? No, Daz is shaking his head.
No,
10 wins on the bounce prediction.
Well, no, it's not a case of that. I just think we put them to bed. And you know,
I like Bromley. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know where those angst is with Bromley, but I quite like them. I like Andy Woodman. I like their teams. It's a 3G surface, yeah, but they've got, you know, they're up and coming. I think.
They've done a terrific job, him and people around him, the owners and everything, because they punch him well above the weight.
They talked about this 30,000 bringers home. They wanted an average crowd of 3,333 for the last 10 matches or whatever it was. I can't quite remember the facts. So you know, their average was about 1,000 less than that. They did a 4-for-2 offer, didn't they? So buy two and get four tickets. It probably might not. It may or may not count for the Chesterfield game. I don't know. But you know that is a long way above their weight. It would be in League Two, no question. Yeah. But they've been there. I mean, they lost to us in the playoffs, having beaten us in the league a week or two earlier.
Yeah,
there is definitely something about them.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of clubs around. I mean, to be, you're either in London, you appear to be around the sort of Dagenham, Bromley, sort of on the cusp of 2,000 to 3,000, or you get in 20,000 Crystal Palace. Do you know what I mean? It seems like nobody can sort of split that sort of middle. There's no middling sort of, you know, sort of area.
But having had a terrific run, Bromley, their last three league games have been drawn away at Maidenhead, drawn at home to Boreham Wood, drawn
that's a disappointment,
away at Aldershot, lost at Fylde. That's hardly promotion for them, is it?
Yeah, Woodman wasn't happy on Saturday.
No, well,
he was a bit annoyed with his strikers because he said they had numerous chances. I'm not seeing the game back. I just saw his interview and he was not impressed.
When they conceded early, Fylde scored 11. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, when Crow House, I think they've sold him on, but got him on back on loan. I can't remember they sold him to
Brentford.
Brentford, that's right.
Round of the trophy?
They're on the 10th of February against Aveley, at home to Aveley.
10th of Feb.
Yeah, so that means that their match away at Oldham is postponed. So, we'll be playing on that day, of course, Ebbsfleet. So that'll change the dynamic of the table, hopefully, won't it? It's a big match, but like you say, if we beat Eastleigh, Dagenham and Ebbsfleet, it becomes not a big match. It becomes a game where both teams just want to win. We've got to win. It's not a 6-pointer anymore. We've not got any 6-pointers coming up anymore. Surely, have we?
No, we haven't. No, I mean, with them in a trophy, as you say, if we win those three games before it, we could go to Bromley 20 points in front of them, couldn't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not even a 6-pointer for the other side.
No.
Because
they're so far behind. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah, they'll be more in, Bromley, when they play us, will be more interested in what Barnet are doing than not what's going on in front of their eyes.
Exactly, So it's about maintaining
and, their... And both of those teams seem far enough in front of Altrincham and Solihull not to throw away second and third. They feel as though they've got second and third nailed. And that might be where they're going for the trophy a little bit, thinking, well, as long as we don't do anything stupid. Yeah. But all of a sudden, Bromley are thinking, flipping out, we've got 1 point out of four matches. Anyway, talking of that gap, Stuart, 19 points is the biggest gap that a team's ever won the National League by. Luton Town, wonder what happened to them after that. But, yeah, we're all discovering new records every week, aren't we, at the moment? It's been one of those stupid, bonkers seasons.
I've had as many different goes at, you know, the record number of straight wins in league matches and across all games and all that sort of thing. And as soon as you kind of calculate it and you check it five times and you're happy with it, we go and win again. So, you know, it's been interesting to try and keep track of it. And the more you look at things, the more you discover odd, obscure little bits and pieces.
And I love the comment you made on X about it's probably the season with the most record, apart from the first season when that was record number of wins,
we won another one,
record number of players used, you know, record number of scorers,
absolutely.
But there's always got to be a start, hasn't there? One of the modern day records at our modern stadium will of course be the crowds against you. It beggars belief, doesn't it? We had a great season last year and we're 10 or 15% up on that this year.
We are. We're the average at the moment, 7.623 for home attendances. And the closest we've ever come to that was in our first season here when we won the League Two Championship, and that was 6.972. So we're about, what's that?
It's nearly 10%, isn't it?
Yeah.
But
as long as I hold up for the rest of the season.
But the thing is, with that, of course, there were a hell of a lot more away fans that season than this year.
Yeah.
Average of 615 away in our first season, and it's 374 this season.
Yeah, so that's another only 300 that adds to it. And when you think you've got Jack Lester, you've got Jack Lester, Craig Davis at their pomp, and a shiny new stadium to prick everybody's interests.
It does
show you, doesn't it?
7% of the entire population of Chesterfield are coming to the SMH Group Stadium. You know, given large, 100,000, given large, that is the hottest ticket in town by a country mile for anything that's put on.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, anything that's put on.
Yeah.
There's only
T20 in the park against Yorkshire. And a lot of those people don't come from Chesterfield.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
no question about
it. They should be lauding that fact, Chesterfield.
Yes, absolutely. So. No question about it. It's been absolutely incredible. And, the 21 different teams beaten. I did check Wrexham. They did beat everybody last year. Wrexham did beat everybody.
Yeah.
They didn't obviously win every game, but they avenged all of the draws and all of the defeats with a victory. So, the best we can do there is equal that record.
Yeah.
And, of course, that means winning at Oldham and winning at home to Maidenhead. So we're likely to win away at Oldham.
Yeah, Maidenhead, knowing us, would be more of a challenge, wouldn't it, with our record against them.
That'll be the most nervous game of the season if we win at Oldham and you're coming in to try and beat everybody and it's flipping Maidenhead last match of the season. You could just see it going wrong, can't you? It's just...
beating Oldham and winning the title?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's still a possibility.
I've been saying that for a while, it'll be Oldham. I've been saying it'll be Oldham for a while. If anything, it might be a game quicker now because Bromley and Barnet have dropped off a bit more than we all expected, whilst we haven't.
But, which would be the
but
earliest
I just want,
we've ever
I just
won.
I want to win it at home.
Yeah.
Much that there's an irony about perhaps winning it at Oldham. I want to win it at home because we haven't won promotion. And I know this is a joint thing. If you win promotion, you've won the championship. We haven't won a promotion at home since the 1930s. All the promotions since then, 69-70 was away at Exeter, was it, I think, and 84-85 was we won promotion without playing because Hereford failed to win a match. 94-95 we won at Wembley. 2000-2001, we lost at Brighton, but Hull didn't get the result they needed at Southend. 10-11, we won without playing because Wickham didn't beat Torquay on Good Friday. 13-14, we won away at Burton because and that was a terrific game, but it was away and it was at Burton. So, yeah, we haven't won. I can't remember if it was 30-31 or 35-36, but it's the 30s. I think it was when we beat Gateshead 8-0, wasn't it, Stu? Was that 35-36 or
30-31? 35-6, I think.
Yeah. So there won't be anybody alive who's seen Chesterfield win promotion at home. They'll be there.
What you just rattled off there, Phil, is an incredible amount of success since Chesterfield moved to the SMH Group Stadium.
Yeah.
League One playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, I know they dropped down to the National League. They've won two fourth division titles. Yeah. So the caveat obviously is that. But the success that's coming with it, you know, that's been building the playoffs in the National League, you know, it's all like a roller coaster effect now, isn't it?
And to come back to that with 3 or 4 years of abject misery right in the middle of it.
Is
stunning, really.
And the ownership change and the football has contributed to that crowd element without any question. And the long-term strategy, Daz, of the trust, and this has been under previous ownership, it was the strategy of the trust, but it didn't get listened to as much as it does now. Is getting kids in for their first match, because if you never come to a first match, you never come to a second. And you know, the working with schools, and it's been a long-term thing, but they've not always been able to get as many deals, they're not necessarily free tickets, deals in as they wanted, but they're doing it now, and it's showing Even if only 25% of the people that come on one of those deals become regulars, that's paid for your discounted ticket, hasn't it, Des?
Oh, yeah. Every day. I know we've spoken about this earlier part of the season. I've never seen so many kids of 4 or 5 upwards to teenagers in the ground in my lifetime. I've never seen as many women in the ground in my lifetime. And it's wonderful, really, that all the hard work, the goodwill, that everything that the trust do away from football is obviously percolating through the town. There's a feel-good factor, isn't there, at every level. And ally that to a Paul Cook team playing football for the gods and scoring 115 goals in a calendar year, and you know, taking you to Wembley, and despite the disappointment, you know, the whole town bounced back, didn't they, in August, and got behind the team again, and off we went. And I just hope we don't make the mistakes that the previous regime made when we got promotion under Sheridan and wasted the opportunity and went straight back down, and a similar thing under when Cookie took us up and then into the playoffs and then did a U-turn and you know, within 4 seasons we're in the bloody National League. So we've got to be careful. I'd rather build slowly. I do think we're capable with the squad we've got, and we talked earlier about this, the depth and the players that have all been re-signed with a minimal number of additions. I think we could, given a fair win, run through League Two quite happily. Because I've watched quite a bit of League Two this year, and there's nothing in there that would frighten me, I have to say.
And if Stockport, Wrexham go up, and maybe Notts County as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a free run, because there's no such thing as a free run. But no. You know, at that point, you'd look at the Gillinghams of this world as your dangers.
Yes.
Rather than another Wrexham, another Stockport, another Notts County.
And you've 3 automatics and 1 playoff player. Yeah. So, you know, getting the top 7.
As many chances.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So all the ingredients are there. I'm sure the stewards that are now in charge of the club, both on the trust side and with Phil and Ashley, who have obviously been a godsend, I think they're building in the right way, and if we just don't do anything silly, and look at it as a five-year plan rather than a five-minute plan, as we've often done in the past, I think the opportunity is there for us to really cash in this time and get that core, instead of it being 3,500 diehards, get it to 5,500 and to 6,000 and to 7,000.
The biggest disappointment about it all, if the success continues, is that it'll be a very high proportion of season tickets. So you'll reduce the amount of times you can work with schools to bring new youngsters in. That's a dilemma that somebody's going to have to sit down and think about if it continues. And then, of course, you've got to get the new generation kids coming in and coming back after they've had a beef burger.
Yeah.
He went there.
Yeah, we were doing so well for an hour and 34 minutes of positivity, and then
one for the forum.
The B word, yeah.
But yeah, such is life. We're all dismissing the fact that Chesterfield won't win the league this season. You can't put a bet on that. Says more than anything. There isn't another manager in the National League that expects any other team to win. Of course, Paul Cook and everybody in the dressing room, you expect not to say that. Yeah. But yeah. Stuart, the title's in the bag, surely, it really is, isn't it, really?
It would be a record-breaking collapse, wouldn't it, in this record-breaking season, if it were not to be, I think.
I haven't looked back at Burton's promotion, because when
Roy Mack took over as manager.
Yeah, from Cluffy, yeah. Because they nearly threw it away, didn't they?
They tried very hard, yeah.
I don't remember what season it was. I'll have a look. I'll have a look at...
It was after he left, so it was after 2007, wasn't it? So you have to have a look. So it might be something like 9, 10, 10, 11, something like that.
Was that the one where Nigel Clough went to Derby? Mid-season?
Yes.
Yeah.
I will say, though, that people really need to consider buying a ticket for the Maidenhead home game, the last game of the season. You really want to be looking at that, because I imagine they're selling more than any other, probably. Yeah.
Because if it happens that there is a trophy to be presented, it'll be done at that game, won't it?
Yes, it will.
They only ever present it at the last game. I don't think they present it during the season. Yeah. And that's quite right, too. You know, you can't.
Yeah.
But there'll be two full houses, for sure. Mm. There'll be that Maidenhead game, and there'll be, if there's a chance of winning the competition
if it does happen to be an away game, and this is for you, Daz and Phil, is to drop enough hints to perhaps do a beam back if there's not enough tickets. Obviously Oldham exception, because they get, I don't know how many tickets they'd give Chesterfield, but say it's at somewhere else, then the possibility of a beam back would be
you'd there. Be able to watch the National League TV
well not TV, if it's a 3 p.m. Saturday at the club, would you?
You can in Belgium.
Yeah,
you can in Belgium.
We're not in Belgium.
Well, if they're going to be able to win it, it'll be on telly. If they're going to be able to win it, it's going to be on telly, isn't it?
You would think so. But their TNT have always booked up their, unless they've waited a bit. So I don't know how far in advance they've gone.
I suspect they're being quite cautious now.
Yeah.
Because
it's worth inquiring about a beam back, because you can get. You can get 2,500 fans in there in the West Stand if you just open that and put two big screens in. Anyway, that's just my idea.
At Burton in 2008-09, in their last 14 games, they got 14 points.
All right. Okay.
Really?
Lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Lost eight games out of the last 14.
Eight games. What month did that start? In February, was it?
28th of February, they drew away at Woking. Then lost, 1-1-1, drawn, lost, 1, lost. So I'll see if I can get their last win before that run, ironically, was a 2-1 win over Wrexham in February. I'll see if I can get a table at that point. I might not be able to.
Football web pages.
See how clear they were.
Yeah. So far has been your outstanding moment of the season, Paul? I know I've just dropped that on you.
I'd say, well, I mean, as always, the FA Cup run is always a nice little distraction, isn't it? In particular, I think.
By the way, I've just found when Burton beat Wrexham, they extended their lead at the top of the Blue Square Premier to 19 points.
Oh, right. My word.
Let's see how many they won it by in the end. Yeah. Let's see how many they won it by in the end. So we want the table that season. Okay, carry on, Paul.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry. The FA Cup run, obviously, the late winners at the start of the season, they were always quite nice, weren't they, to have? And but I suppose really just collectively the group itself, it always seems like they're together, you know, as a team, and it's always quite nice. One standout moment doesn't really, it kind of gives a bit of disservice to the rest of the league results because, you know, Chesterfield have won 18 consecutive home games. It's hard to pick one out, you know, so as a best. Really.
Burton won the league by 2 points. From being 19 clear.
I can't be having that.
No,
sorry.
No, we can't be doing that. No.
I can't do that.
No, draw against Maidenhead at home and rely on Bromley losing to win the league. No.
I don't know. No. I'll put it this way. I think our regular attendance would drastically drop if that was to happen. The A&E department would be risen, wouldn't it? So I would imagine.
And they just... picked up the victory from Cambridgeshire because Cambridge United finished second and Histon finished third. Torquay went up by the playoffs and finished fourth. So my word, that must have been. It felt heart stopping when we weren't taking any notice of it.
Yeah, poor old Roy.
Yeah, So Stuart, your outstanding moment of the season.
Third goal against Solihull in that 5 minute comeback from 2-2 to win 3-2. I think. Yeah. You know, because the whole 5 minutes was just kind of feverish in terms of atmosphere, you know, and, you know, the whole crowd got behind the team and willed it forwards and the team responded. And, you know, the third goal obviously won us the game. And I think in a lot of people, myself included, it sort of really firmed up the belief that this was going to be the year. If we were capable of pulling a performance like that out of the bag, you know, after not looking in it for a little while during the match, at least, you know, I think myself particularly, I think that was the one that did the belief that it was going to happen for me, you know?
Yeah, that's a very good, having lost, say, 4 or 5 days before, whenever the gap was.
Yeah. Well, and just because it's Solihull.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So 2-0 down. Having lost 2-0 a few days earlier, yeah, very, very good point, and difficult to argue against that one. Does your moment of the season so far?
The 4-goal burst against Barnet.
Yeah.
They'd come up full of hope. Mm. Crowd was, you know, big, wasn't it? Expectation was big.
Yeah. 50, 60, 76 and 86 the minutes.
Yeah, we misfired a bit first half, but then just went up a gear. And, you know, as I've made comment to one or two people in the East End Massive this season, a number of teams have come up here in decent form thinking they're the best side in the league and have gone home realising they're not the best side in the league. Yes. And and Barnet definitely fell into that category because they came full of hope, full of confidence, playing well. You know, a manager who's I've got a high regard for, Dean Brennan. I think he's done a good job down there. Always talks a decent game. And I think they were fairly confident they would get something out of the game. And all credit to them, they came and gave it a go. But when we turned the wick up, then, yeah, it was men against boys. And that's a bit how I felt about Saturday, in all honesty, at the end of the day. And to do that to your then nearest rivals, who could they have gone above us? Were we only 2 points ahead of them?
It was very close.
And now what are we... 16 points ahead with games in hand. So I think that was a pivotal game, really. That just said to everybody else, it's not happening. Yeah. You know what?
Well, and for me, it was James Berry's goal against Altrincham. We'd seen how, you know, that there are good teams in the division. and Altrincham had really given us a tough ask. James Berry had been at Altrincham previously, of course, and it was the quality of that goal. So you're up against a team that are really seriously good and look as though they could end the game having beaten you. And yeah, we pop up with that, the quality of that Berry goal, the little 1-2 with Banks. And then the finish, I keep looking at that and I'm still not quite sure how he got it through them players that were on the edge of the box. It's like, well, where did it go?
It's one of those ones where the moment he hits it, he's turning away, isn't it? Because he knows where it's going.
Well, he used the defender, didn't he, to actually shield the goalkeeper away from the post and bent it round him. And it was a terrific finish.
Overall, I've said this many a time, and I've top Paul Cook every season that he's been here, that I just want to see us go through a home season unbeaten. Yeah. It's never happened. That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
Okay,
but
right.
We'll say it, didn't you?
Yeah,
I know.
So, any other business, gentlemen? I've got a bit. We're reinvigorating the fund for the additional room in the Memorial Garden and a permanent memorial to Ernie Moss. That I think £15,000 or so pounds have been raised so far, but on Wednesday. So Wednesday of this week, which is probably the day that the podcast will come out, we've got a raffle, and that's the online raffle thing for this a guy called Matty Grennan, who is a Peak Park Ranger, but in his spare time he is the Stone Ranger. He does hand carved stones, and he's doing in Derbyshire Stone. A magnificent carving of the Chesterfield logo that we're raffling off, £5 a ticket, unique item, all the money going to that Ernie Moss Memorial Fund. And he's going to be actually carving it this Sunday live on YouTube. So he'll be able to drop in and see how he does it. The raffle's open for 4 or 5 weeks or something like that. So you're not going to get it. Right. But that'll be all being launched on the Wednesday. So you'll see how to do that. Dave has done a Legend of the Spire podcast with Matty, so you'll be able to hear a little bit more about it as well. That's been released on Wednesday.
Nice plug.
Then, of course, is the supporters drop in, where we'll see if Burgers come up again. I think they look as though they might come up. great thanks to everybody who booked on the half-term tours. I think we'll be adding another one on, so keep your eyes on that if you missed out. Because the three that we put on all sold out within hours. So Stuart and I will be there on that day. And just a little tease for 1866 Sport. We will be, I'm not going to tell you what yet, just get a few bits sorted out, but we'll be having a new football based show starting on 1866 before you know it. So that's my bit of any other business, Paul.
I just draw people's attention again, if they've not and it's not popped through to their releases, of the little special I did for the behind the scenes press stuff that was released on Sunday. So you haven't got it in your inbox. Sorry about that. I don't know if why it's not arrived, but it is there, and it's just 26 minutes long. It's a nice little teaser. For you to listen to, and it's timeless, so you can listen to it whenever you want. It's no reflection on dates or anything like that.
Yeah, people can listen to it while they're queuing up for the burgers.
They could do, yeah. Judging by the people that went down at half time at 35 minutes Saturday, so it's a long queue.
Yeah.
Stuart?
No, nothing for me. Let's just carry on.
He's too busy
doing.
Checking on records.
Well, I know.
Not to do any other business. Yeah. Just get them records checked.
Yeah. There were any other records. Never mind any other business.
Yeah. Yes. And for that, can you tell us how many records we've beaten this season? And is it the record number of records apart from that last season?
Like, we've broken more records this season than there are in John Peel's man caves.
Question about it. But what a privilege it's been this season, really.
Yeah.
We all like to win. We've had seasons where we've won quite a lot of games. Yeah. But to win them in the style that they are,
yes. Yeah.
To feel that this team is, or squad, let's call it a squad, to feel this squad is going to largely be what is with the club next year as well, knowing that there's going to be thousands upon thousands of people watching it progress. Yeah, that's the special bit for us of a certain age who've been coming for a long time, Daz, isn't it?
It is. I mean, the only slight fly in the ointment for me was the announcement from Liverpool last Friday about impending demise of Jurgen Klopp, because as we know, the only place Cookie would walk to take over is his beloved Liverpool. So let's hope they find some suitable replacement for Mr. Klopp before the end of the season.
Yeah, Xavi Alonso or Paul Cook, is it?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for listening in. We'll be back when we're back. In no doubt, hopefully, touch wood, there's no Burton Albion in this, and we'll be a bit closer to getting back. You hardly want to say that the getting back to the promised land, because we don't want to be in League Two. We want to be one above that and challenging, as we were in 2015, the last time Paul Cook was here. It's been a great ride, but it's going to be a greater one, I feel. Shall I say back-to-back promotions? Yes! We will. You've been listening to Sky is Blue, Phil Tilley talking rubbish, and of course Paul Fisher, Daryl Carpenter and Stuart Basson. Thank you very much.
And if you like this podcast, then don't forget to subscribe. Please rate and review us on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts, and many of your favourite podcast providers.